Blog Talk Radio.
In the background, this is a Monday edition of the so yeah, like I was saying, everybody, somehow I got disconnected, but this is K Son and Friends. I'm Citizen Payne. It's a special like Monday edition because there's just too much going on in our country nowadays. We can't not talk about it to keep you informed, and also too because I would just be talking into the air if I didn't have nobody else to talk about the situation that we find ourselves in this country, and because that's what we do, right? We talk about it and we inform people. And we stay informed. I'm K's son, Citizen Payne, like I said earlier. K's son and friends. Going to bring the fellas in, Brother Byron Saunders, legendary historian. We might have some people calling in that want to get their two cents in on what's going on. Wayne is, we will see if he's feeling better or not. Or we're doing the experiment because he got his COVID shot today. So he will be the live guinea pig that can give us the update on what it is exactly like. Call him an embedded reporter in terms of the medical that needs to be examined for this pandemic. And, you know, today, wanted to talk about some stuff last week, but today is the second impeachment trial of Don Trump begins. The articles just got walked over to the Senate a little while ago. Should be interesting, shouldn't it? Should really be interesting because from what I can tell, ladies and gentlemen, that although the Republicans were talking unity in some situations, and Marco Rubio saying this is stupid to do this trial, Marco Rubio calling something stupid. But anyway, I get distracted. But what I want to say is that it's just really interesting how they change their colors, and I guess they're not really changing their colors. They're just, you can't trust them anywhere. They'll say anything at any time to achieve their ends. And I'm not surprised that now some of them are calling for unity or saying this trial is unnecessary or whatever. And to me, I guess I'm just still tripping about, or still amazed, I guess, amazed to the fact that how real it is that there are rules in this country, but there are really no rules as far as some people are concerned. And if you look at the some of the events and some of the things that have been discovered through the various reporters who seem to be the ones that are only ones that are able to dig up a lot of this stuff. But if we look at, you know, what the guy at the DOJ was trying to do and sneak around behind his boss and work with Trump to get that guy out and steal the election, you know, and how it was so embedded that other people in the DOJ, other career professionals decided they were going to walk out if this took place. All of these things that are coming out, and these people still want to support this guy. So it shows you exactly they don't believe in any of this stuff that they promote, that they suggest. They only believe it as it pertains to them, and everything else is up for grabs. And, you know, one of the things that struck my that came into my mind recently in thinking about the attack on the Capitol, as these people try to describe it away, walk away from it, and want to let people go for unlawful entry, all kind of, you know, you see the seeds, you see the embeddedness of white supremacy. But really what's bigger than that to me is that These people are talking about, we're the people. This is our house. Why are you breaking the windows? What's the need for vandalism in your house, in the people's house? It shows you really how little an understanding of what they're even fighting for, what they were even thinking about, what America was about. You know, I mean, when you're trying to show some sort of direction, I guess, you're trying to make some sort of political statement, people are won by ideals. People are won by justifying the argument. Otherwise, it's just war. It's just tit for tat going back and forth. You know, and we're going to talk about some of these other things that these guys are doing, like McConnell refusing the organizing resolution, which recognizes the powers of the incoming majority and allowing them to take their places as chairmen of the various committees. Mitch McConnell's holding it up by pulling some arcane tricks. And you see the Republicans objecting to Biden's stimulus package that he's trying to put out there. They don't want unity, you know, and I hope that the Democrats, like I said, let's not be the punk ass Democrats. Let's not do that. Let's just get the closure vote and work for a simple majority and ram everything through. These people, all they want to do is object and wait and control and have their own power. And it's really interesting because, you know, I've gotten to fights with friends from high school and stuff like that because they've gone on their natural course as white people, and I've gone on my natural course as a black man. And what I mean by the natural course is it's the path that was laid for us by society to say this is the norm, this is the group you should be in. Not all the white friends, but I know that I'm not surprised that there's some that became conservative type of people. I could see their upbringing as I think about it now, even though they individually, you know, people meet people of different races and color, maybe individually might be good. But as a whole, no, they buy into the selling points, the stereotypes that have been told to them. And they fit into the norms and their positions in society. And they've grown up to support this racist. And in trying to describe to some of my friends, I guess I can't blame them because they were brought up in this country like I was, and they were devoid of the truth like I was. And but some things seem so clear. Some things seem so equal. Break them down. It's really about equality. So I'm kind of all over the place because we got a lot of stuff to discuss, and there's a lot of messes in this country. And if you've seen the one meme picture that I've seen of Joe Biden, there's kind of an illustration of him in the White House. And it's a wreck. The Oval Office is a wreck. And it's just, you know, they're finding all of this stuff that the Trump administration and all of his people have left behind and gunned and damaged that they did. This guy was operating like he thought he was a mob boss, as you guys all know. And so that's why I would fire people, you know, hire people. That's why he sent a hit mob down there to take out his vice president, even though everybody wants to act like the language was not that incendiary or whatever. And Rudy was there, too. You know, Rudy's got a track record of doing that. If you know anything about Rudy Giuliani, he did the same thing with Dave Dinkins, tried to get Dave Dinkins jammed up when the racist cops marched on City Hall when Dave Dinkins was mayor of New York. So Rudy Giuliani, I'm so glad that he's getting sued for $1 billion so this guy can be revealed as who he truly is. I'm sorry if it comes off a little harsh what I'm saying, but I'm just talking about the truth. And we should not, because certain people are in certain positions, not deal with the truth as equally and even-handed as we would with anybody else. There was a dude, and I'm going to bring you on, Byron. There was a dude, Cornell, I forget the brother's name with the gray hair that's always on MSNBC, and he said, can you imagine if Barack Obama had said BLM down to storm the Capitol, what would have happened? And yeah, when you put it in those terms, it shudders you. It's like, whoa, brother, you don't want to give him that bad of a nightmare. But imagine what would have happened or how people would have perceived that, right? Unbelievable. Let's bring in the legendary historian, Brother Byron Saunders. Byron, you down there in the middle of it.
Oh, my goodness. The cesspool and the stench emanating from the Senate side and the GOP seats needs to be reconciled and away. Now, Okay, let's ask a little constitutional question here for you, my friend. Eric, my sister, Leslie Saunders, who's a Huffington Post blogger, postulated to Huffington Post and to the Senate. After watching so many Law & Order shows at Perry Mason, I ask you the question. A juror, and let's put it, associate who we're talking about, the Senators, 100 senators, you cannot sit on the jury and decide your fate if you are one of the co-conspirators. Think about that for a second. What does that really mean, Eric? What that is questioning is that you understand where this is going now, because if there's so many GOP senators who can be confirmed as engaged in what happened on that day, whether they got a call from the president while it was ongoing, because he did call several congressmen and senators, it is a known fact that if indeed they got a call, and you know he didn't call Democrats, he had to call senators. He had to call because it was a Senate confirmation issue that was ongoing. Both houses were in session. So he did engage in those individuals. And if indeed they got a call, they are becoming now what? Witnesses. You cannot sit on the jury and be your own juror for being a witness, whether you are a witness for the prosecution or you are confirmed as a rogue witness for the other side. Either way, now start taking away the number of people who are needed. We need 17 senators, right, to get the conviction. Start taking away those persons who were engaged and called to depose them. Start reducing their numbers. This is nuclear now. Yes, the Democrats have the option to go all the way and just make it a simple vote, yay or nay, 50-50 tie goes to the vice president.
That's right.
So now, see where I'm headed with this? Because this is constitutional now.
Yep.
It's about law and order. And if any of those names come up on that investigation at the FBI that are sitting senators, they cannot sit in jury of themselves.
Right. I mean, I'm saying it like that because, yeah, you say so, but that kind of, you know how they think.
That is the law, isn't it?
Listen, hey, Byron, let me just throw this out there.
Yeah.
Their Fuhrer was thinking about pardoning, was thinking he could pardon himself. So he was thinking he could sit in judgment of himself. So, you know, that kind of sickness of thought seems to travel in their party, right? They go against all reasonable mindedness.
Yes.
You know? And they go for what's
and see,
good
this
for
is
them.
Why it's important. Yeah, and it's why it's important to have the impeachment trial. And yes, we know that now that Supreme Court Justice Roberts won't be in charge, but the Democrats are in charge of the hearing. That's where it gets down to. That's what I'm saying. If they're going to go Democrats, like you said, then now's not the time to punk out and play games. This is the time you go hard. When they go low, you go hard.
That's right.
Because you know where they're headed. They're going to try and deflect everything with respect to their own personal involvement, and we got them on tape. We got their email records. We can go to the National Security Agency. That's the one house, both houses, Senate and Congress, that are susceptible to the National Security Agency's oversight. So let's not play games.
Yeah,
you want to demand accountability? You go from the top on down. Put Mitch McConnell, depose his ass. Cawley, depose him. Rubio, depose him. Cruz, depose him. You see what I'm saying? Take them out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I keep always say, the honor system only works when you have the people in the system are honorable. And these guys will not do the honorable thing. They must be forced. That's why the Democrats have to be afraid to use this option, because none of them, of course, they're going to try to get away with sitting in the trial, sitting in judgment of themselves. Of course they're going to try to get away with swaying the thing. They all been doing it. And, you know, one guy, I mean,
yeah.
you know, one dude said, you know, they're trying to make the case you can't, he's not in office, so you can't impeach him anymore. And, you know, and they're trying to make the case it's not unifying the country, all kind of absurd stuff that they could care less about, except when somebody
yeah.
else is doing it and to make themselves look good. I mean, you know, like you were talking about the Constitution, you know, what McConnell's doing now to block the chairmanships of the Senate committees.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's despicable, but that's who this guy is. So, I mean, you know, it's
yeah.
like we're saying, we have to, you know, let's not play. And I think that Joe Biden, even though he says he's been around long enough to negotiate, I think that he knows also how to play hardball when it gets to a certain point.
And he does.
I think
and you're right.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
really does,
yeah,
Eric. And this is why it's important. We have professionals running things now. Because the challenge is going to come up with some really stupid stuff. But you know what? The methodical way in which he is addressing each and everything that has to be undone because it's been perverted by the previous administration, he is taking that time. And, yes, the optics are almost seem elementary. But guess what? You keep exposing what's being exposed. Yes, Trump made those calls. Yes, he is guilty of every federal guideline for voting suppression. Let's add in a couple of other murders and everything else along the way, because I want America to hear a GOP senator defend his non-action. I don't want to hear another. I want to keep hearing it, because America has to see who is really a patriot and who's really for themselves. And it's going to be revealed. It's going to stink, and I'm glad the stink is going to be lifted, because we got some stink up in both of them houses.
Yeah, you know, it was already revealed recently, you know, as time goes on, more of the truth comes out, and just revealed
yeah.
how he was hesitating, and he was enjoying the fact that these people actually went up there and were storming the castle, and then was dragging his feet and hesitating on sending the National Guard and doing everything he could to try and alleviate or to try to quell the situation. Didn't want to go on the air and talk to people. Didn't want to send the National Guard up there to help. That's what I'm saying. He put a hit out on people. He put a hit out on
he
people.
He did.
Threatened of
That's
violence.
Right.
And didn't want to send the National Guard up there helping people out. I forgot how long the duration, how long of a time it was. It was 6 hours until they finally got the
yeah.
Capitol Hill, the Capitol secured again. 6 hours. 6 hours.
That's right.
These individuals were running amok around the people's house, that they call it. They're some of the people, but they were in there destroying the house. I don't understand
yeah.
what
yeah.
you just meant is going to turn stuff over, because you're privileged, entitled individuals are tired of having to share and tell and learn the truth about this country, and now it has to reconcile that truth. And these individuals
and
will
here's
not.
Something else,
clearly.
Eric. Yeah, here's here's something else too that's going to have to come out. And I'm glad it's proceeding in the manner in which it's moving, but what also has to come out, we have to then draw the line that says domestic terrorist is representing a party. See, you don't hear them called Republicans. Think about that. Who inside?
Right.
Weren't Democrats up there on the Hill? You see, we're going to have.
Right.
This is
yep.
why you're going to have to go hard. You can't. When
yeah.
they go low,
yeah.
go hard on them.
That's right.
Call
don't
them
the
who
language.
They are. They're Republicans. They're Republicans. They're thugs.
Yep. Yep.
And we must call
That's
each
right.
and every one of them out. Rubio, you are a thug. You are a traitor.
But
You committed sedition. Cruz, you too. All of you all who got Russian money. Y'all can't hide behind your orange man now. You're being exposed for who you really are. The traitors and the racists that you really are. Once again, I'm glad they're calling them domestic terrorists. But let's call them what they are and who they really are. You're one of the 74 million Republicans who voted for the insurrectionists.
Mm-hmm.
Shame
so you're
them. All of
suspect.
Them.
they're all suspect. I mean, I hate to say it, but they're all. I mean, you know, if someone voted for this guy after knowing, maybe they didn't know in the beginning. Maybe they didn't know in the beginning. I'll give them that. But if you continue to support him 2 years in, there's really no excuse. There is no excuse.
No,
it's just you want
and
the
now,
truth.
Now you got Huckabuck trying to run for governor in Arkansas. Really? Arkansas.
I thought he did that.
Arkansans. Y'all, wake up. You really want that thug pitch in your governorship's office? That's how you heard me right. I called her that. Serial liar.
You're talking about the daughter. Oh, okay, because I was going to say the father had already been elected to governor.
He already been the governor, but she's running for governor.
Right, right.
Come on, Republicans. Y'all want to clean up your party. Y'all better clean it up because the vortex y'all are in right now is going to ruin you for the rest of your lives.
Yeah.
Step away.
I don't think
so. You're only going to get one chance on this, guys. McConnell, you better rope your people in because once they're exposed, there's nothing you can do to save them. You can't even save your own butt right now.
Yeah, they're not interested in doing the right thing. They're not. They don't care.
That's
I mean,
right.
You know, Trump's threatening to splinter their party, steal their party. Which I say, have at it,
have at it, baby.
I mean, because they're already determined to be racist. So
Paul Rand.
Just gonna see what.
Gone.
Say it again.
You know, I said Kentucky. Both senior representatives from Kentucky, McConnell. And Paul Rand, what's his name? His son, is that his name?
Oh, Rand Paul.
Who's the other contestant?
Rand
Paul. Yeah. Got to go.
Yeah.
Got to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're obstructionists. They're not for the country. They're not patriots.
Yeah, no.
Far
no.
from it. So, I mean, you know, keep exposing them. Keep that loop playing. I want somebody to finally say, those persons who are up there breaking your Capitol's windows are your Republicans.
Yeah,
that's
but
who
your
party really is. And you can't separate them. You're going to have to link them to the Republican Party.
But the caveat to that is that it is not just a Republican problem. It is also white supremacy as part of their problem, whether it was the majority of the Republican Party, really just if not all white supremacy. But white supremacy is also the problem in the rest of America. And also there are I believe, that people who, if they don't believe in white supremacy, condone white supremacy in the Democratic Party, you know, that still would like to see that. That maybe they're sleeper cells or whatever. But clearly, maybe they don't see white supremacy as being the problem, or maybe they are believing white supremacy and they enjoy the benefits of white supremacy. Because clearly, some of the things that go down, you cannot continue to support some of these people. You cannot continue to try and work with some of these people if you didn't kind of agree with them to a certain degree, right? And I understand how it works. You have to compromise with people that you wouldn't normally compromise with. And you have to make compromises. But there are certain things upon which that you don't compromise, you know, your morals, your integrity, your honesty, your honor. Those are certain the things that you don't compromise on. And that's what when some of these individuals cross that compromising line, that threshold, that's when we lose it. I mean, you know, I know there's at least one Democratic senator who doesn't always go with the party line, who kind of is an outlier, you know. That's his constituency.
Right.
His constituency is kind of semi-Trump country, but they vote Democrat. But, you know, he's one of the people that might be problematic in trying to get to the simple up or down vote and going to the nuclear option. Because once you do that, you got to have your party in line. And these talking heads that I was saying were saying, well, there's a couple of individuals who might not go along with the party. And so there we have it. That's what I'm talking about. We need to make sure we're all on the same page and there aren't some sleeper cells that are in our – because, like I said, some – you know, the races were all in the Democratic Party back in the Civil Rights days, right? So,
that's
you know,
right.
Why is it impossible to believe that some of them are still there, you know?
They are. They got to be rooted as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, so, and therein lies the problem. whether or not these guys can be trusted. You know, we already know that members of the House of Representatives or the Senate were giving it, was at least some people gave some of these insurrectionists a tour, these terrorists a tour the day before in the Capitol. So we know that, and one, the QAnon congresswoman wants to bring her gun on the House floor, and was arguing with the police. It's like, why do you want, what's the need that you have to bring a firearm on the House of Representatives floor? Supposed to be one of the most secure places in the world. So why do you have a need to bring a gun? So, you know, all of these really obvious things keep going on, and the Democrats, somebody keeps sometimes making the decision to kind of not, like we said, go hard enough. And let's deal with this and deal with once and for all, instead of keep letting them punk you and do all kinds of stuff to throw a wrench in our game. Even when we're supposed to be, we all commit, we all pledge allegiance to the flag and all this other stuff, and here all these people are trying to overthrow that very notion. And then when it's time for them to turn over the power and do the very act that they pledge to do, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and do all of that stuff, when it comes your time, these Republicans will not honor that pledge. The Democrats are supposed to be in the majority. They could take that from them, but just the fact that this dude is doing what he's doing to obstruct and be the grim reaper that he is unbelievable. Let me get another caller in. The assemblyman, my father, would like to get his comments on what he thinks of last couple of days and the political situation. Certainly the impeachment. Dad, former Assemblyman William D. Payne. How you doing, Daddy?
Fine. How you doing? Good. Yeah, right. Certainly the topic is very, very, I don't know whether it's complex or not. This country was based upon, white supremacy, and it's been carried through from the very beginning. 1600s, they brought over, about 20 captives, and slavery started here. And it's been embedded in, this country. I don't know, but I guess we simply have to continue to work.
Let me tell you what we're talking about. Dad. We're talking about I was talking about the notion that even on our side, because it's white supremacy and it crosses the boundaries throughout the country, throughout political parties, even on the Democratic side, some people have lived within the lifestyle of white supremacy, say. Maybe they don't practice it, but that's the lifestyle of America. Even for the most liberal person, I submit, for the most liberal person that has children and does not teach their children any bit of racism, their kids are still going to get from socialization the impression that they are part of the privileged group. So therefore, the white people have to actively work against the racism that their kids are receiving to tell them that they are better than somebody, as well as much as black people have to work against that racism to tell their kids that they're just as good. So I suggest that there are members of the Democratic Party that might be sympathetic to the racists and some of the Republican members. And I'm thinking of moderate Democrats that sometimes vote with the Republicans and don't always vote with the Democrats. And what's your thought about that when you have it happening?
Well, as you said earlier, that the Democrats were the ones that were the racists before. The Republicans were, they're the front. Lincoln was a Republican and freed the slaves, and therefore the Republicans were supposed to be more understanding of the position of African Americans. You know, the Democrats were terrible, horrible people. And it's just, it seems as though the title has flipped, and that there's still people down there that's part of the culture that down in the South, and the party changed during Roosevelt's time and things like that. But it could be some, the Democrats of the South, have been the were the races until later time. So there was just a kind of a flip. Who was going to be the ones that were pro slavery and pro et cetera. So it's so deeply embedded. It's, you know, let me tell you, I believe we're going to start being able to overcome this is to what's been taught to this country is that blacks were inferior, et cetera, et cetera, and that everything that we did that was positive was never taught to anybody. So therefore, in the back of the minds of whites, that the black, what did they do for us? What do they do here? And unfortunately, a lot of the blacks that were educated or miseducated, that's where that happens to poison our society, because it starts out, I think I may have said in the past, it starts out in the school systems where racism is embedded in the minds of people, and, you know, simple things like I've mentioned in the past, you know, going to school and being taught, little black Sambo was the only thing they taught about black kids when I was coming along. And unfortunately, it still exists in some places. So when it's from the very, it starts very early in the teaching of our students until we are able to force the educational system to teach the truth about the positive role that we made. Then there's many African Americans too, not having been taught anything about the positive things about us, sometimes have a feeling of not being too sure, you know, about pride in our race because we weren't taught it. And so until we're able to change that, then we're going to have this racism to overcome. I'm fighting with it right now where I'm operating to try to instill in people's minds the racism that is still exists there and how do we overcome it. And that's a very complex part of it, but throughout this country, unfortunately, and you know 70 million people voted for the other guy, so there's still deeply embedded. So I have some thoughts about how to overcome it, but I'm sure you younger guys have better ideas maybe than I do. But it's just perplexing.
Yeah, 74 million people voted for him to be reelected. So what I was saying earlier, Byron, they voted for him the first time, but I can't see the ones who the 74 million are a suspect and obviously leaning towards supremacy of some sort. And even in the way that they're prosecuting the rioters, right? Because now they're talking about letting some of the rioters off with just unlawful entry.
Yeah.
They're saying the workload is so overwhelming to get everybody. And that's just, to me, another aspect of the supremacy aspect, because obviously the majority of those individuals were of one particular hue. And also, you know, not only that, you know, they were breaking the law, so they should have to pay, you know, should have to suffer the consequences. Frank Flaguzzi, I think his name is, the FBI guy that does a lot of interviews, he said that there is no designation for domestic terrorism on the law books, meaning that you can't accuse that crime is not accusable on the law books, so you can't throw them in jail for 20 years. You know, he said if they had been Muslim and they had attacked the Capitol yelling jihad, then there could be a foreign terrorist and they would automatically get 20 years. But because there's no designation for domestic terrorism, this is the loophole once again that we find with America, all the loopholes where people can get off and the gray area comes in. I want to ask you, Deb, before I let you go, Hank Aaron, we lost Hank Aaron the other day, great Hank Aaron. And from black people perspective and historical perspective, I know we weren't really baseball fans too much in the house, so we're more football heads. But what's your thoughts about Hank Aaron and what he meant as an African American?
That the, as he stated that even though he was the top home run hitter, beat Babe Ruth's record, he had to have security also in those days. That he had to be protected to wherever he went. I mean, it had to, as with Jackie Robinson, now some of the earlier ones, they had to live. They couldn't stay with the teams. They had to, you know, live in separate places when they on the road, et cetera. So they endured so much. They went through so much and throughout their careers, and that again, the deeply embedded racism was everywhere. And for him to have to go through what he did, and you know that was a story throughout our country at that time and beyond. It took long enough. I remember when Jackie Robinson was brought on, et cetera, and was fortunate enough to be taken to games where he was playing, et cetera. But it's just very frustrating for me, been through all these years trying to overcome racism, et cetera, and trying to get imbue into people that look like me, black people like me, you know, to fight against it, to do something about it, to not accept it as it is, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of people were beaten down and just couldn't stand to fight for it. But anyway, it's just a deep thing. And since I had the opportunity of working with people, knowing people that did die for the cause, I've been doing this for a long time. I just have to make sure that this generation that's here now has to understand that we simply cannot accept second-class citizenship, cannot sit on the sidelines. And I preach over and over again the need to make sure that we all vote, participate and vote until we finally elect somebody that knows what we're talking about and will do what we're talking about, people that look like us or believe with it. But if, in fact, we overlook that or we refuse to vote, then we're going to be in this situation for a long time.
Hank Aaron. Hank and Billy Aaron were personal friends. They supported the arts in Atlanta, Georgia, and the theater company that I ran, and they were always accessible. That's the part that, even with all the security, I was in Atlanta when he hit the home run. It was a very joyous moment, you know, but yes, we had to talk about the security then, because all the hate mail that he was getting, but he always kept a relationship with the community he came. From which he came, and the respect that he garnered was that he didn't have access to steroids. It was the natural, okay?
That's
the stories, we talk about all the enhancements that athletes do today. Everybody's got enhancements today, but he came out of a situation where the Negro League that he with the Monarchs and the game that they played was a much quicker game. It was it was bruising. You get the catcher, what's his name, Josh, what's his name? I mean, played. Yeah. I mean, the barnstorming days? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's how we survived the racism. And so, giving all honor and praise to a man who really came through it, Hank Aaron. And I can tell you, I saw Hank when I moved back to Atlanta in 2001, actually. Okay, I'm in Kroger over off of Cascade Road with my two sons, who at this point are now playing youth stick ball, you know, put the ball on top of whatever you call it, and then hit,
right.
And I'll play the game for the youth. And, cue ball. And so, he's out shopping at Kroger, nobody around him. And I mean, because previous relationship as a friend, I could walk right up to him and say, to introduce my sons to the greatest baseball player alive. And the joy that my sons have. And he accepting them in the middle of Kroger to take time out to say something nice to. That's how Hank Aaron was. He was a people's man. And Billy, his wife, straight up folks, heroes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I was at the Coach Carter premiere in Los Angeles, California, and Coach Carter was a movie about a very influential and inspirational basketball coach in Northern California.
Right.
And it was a movie that was done about his life and Sam Jackson played him. And So the premiere is getting ready to happen at Man's Chinese Theater, and I'm in the lobby, and I'm going, trying to find a men's room, and I walk past somebody real quick, and I turn back, and I was like, oh! I was like, hey! And at one time, I really just kind of turned into a kid, you know? I was like, you know, and I can remember being at our house in Maplewood watching that, him hit the home run. I don't know if we were all home dad or mom, or we were just down there watching because history was ready to be made. But, you know, over the course of my life, I've learned to and been taught by you guys to value when we have these moments of historical moments or our heroes and sheroes of history, not necessarily, you know, athletes, but also people like Hank and other people who were there, not just from athletic feats, but also their social contributions as well. Muhammad Ali was one, Hank Aaron was one, and me, the athletes are great, but being brought up to value the struggle and being brought up by people who were in the struggle, you know, you learn to value the individuals who were credits, like they, quote, say, credit to their race or credit to our race. So I just wanted to say that. Dad, I'm going to let you jump off here unless you want to make another comment. But I want to all right. So,
keep up the good work.
All right.
All right.
Thank
you.
All right. Take care.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, like, the heroes and the heroes. Wow.
Yeah, I always like to get, just to let everybody know, I always like to get the perspective of my father, because he's been around for a long time, obviously, but he's also been, he's a historic person himself. And he's been a witness and a participant in history and a participant in events. And he's from a generation where I think they said, you know, either we're all going to get involved and make this happen, or we're going to have to accept the status quo as it has been for the last couple of years. And history tapped them on the shoulder and said this is their time. And it taps many of us on the shoulder, but at different points. And just like this generation now, the Black Lives Matter generation, history calls upon you to do certain things, whether you're ready or not. And certainly Hank Aaron was a hero of ours. Larry King, not a hero necessarily, but, you know, his accomplishments definitely have to be acknowledged as a media giant. You know, the whole cable TV thing, you know, people don't know Larry King was the original about the cable TV and shows, right, Byron? I mean, Larry King was...
He was there, okay? So you're right, and this is why, even with your father, people don't know. But when you say Amistad legislation, they got to know.
Right.
They got to know
who
that is. They got to know the story behind the story, because he's still battling on the lines. And without his impetus, that piece of legislation gets lost. But it's about to be Black History Month. And legislation engages why the state of New Jersey must teach African-American history.
Mm-hmm. This is why people...
your father's name in the book.
Right.
That's why it's important to understand who our heroes and sheroes are. We must honor them, especially while they're still living. Give honor and praise.
Absolutely. And to understand the process, because we need to educate not only our people, but as many people as possible about the system, about how voting works, about how your government works, how it's supposed to serve you. And so when you have individuals who want to riot, they can learn that there's no need to riot, because, yes, that is indeed your house. And you don't have to break in to go visit. You can go actually visit. You know, you can actually make an appointment and you can even have a guided tour. How about that? You can have how about that? Instead of having to break the windows and stuff. And then, you know what, if on that tour, sometimes you do run into representatives because they're walking back and forth. You can catch them and say, hey, man, you can give them a piece of your mind if you want. You know, they're there.
But to break in and call them by names and hang the nukes and want to assassinate, that's not how this works, y'all. Those were Republicans who did that. I'm going to keep saying it. I'm going to keep calling it. They were Republicans who did that, y'all. Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes,
not
sir.
Antifa. Okay. Republicans did to our nation.
There's another actor that passed that I want to talk about too. Another person that passed. Obviously, a lot of people passed in the last couple of days, and my heart goes out to all of those people that have lost loved ones, certainly in COVID. But I used to watch Sanford and the Son all the time. And there was an actor that passed away, Gregory Sierra. He played Julio on Sanford.
Julio,
and he also played the Puerto Rican. Everybody remembers Julio because that was Lamont's boy. And that was, you know, America being what it was, we as a people reflected the racism that was inflicted upon us. So Fred Sanford was always messing with Julio and his talking about his heritage as a Puerto Rican American, but this actor Gregory Sierra was a good actor, character actor from back in the day. He was also a series regular on Barney Miller's show, and he's done a ton of stuff. I remember seeing him in particular. One of the last things I saw him in was Low Down Dirty Shame with Keenan Ivory, played a heavy there. But he's done a lot of work, and he passed away too. And Hawaii 5-0 soap. He was a character actor back in the day. If you're around my age, you know this guy's face. And for me as an actor, and just as a person growing up in our country, you know, it's part of our culture, seeing individuals like that. And there's certain individuals, Byron, that we grow up seeing on TV, you know. I guess what I'm saying is there's a comfort, like comfort food. There's a comfort viewing factor there when you see these individuals in movies, and it kind of reminds you of back when you were a child and sweeter memories, at least for me, because certainly Sanford and Son is one of the most enjoyable shows, if you ever watched it, you know, and these guys really were great at it. You know, I just wanted to give a shout out.
This is Black History Month coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'm often reminded to remind people, Black History starts January 1st and ends December 31st. We don't need any more. Okay? Right. We need every single day African American history is being made. So it's nice to celebrate those that we give honor to in February, but this is who we are. 24/7, 365, every single day, Black History. Black Friday was last week, wasn't it? Come on now. We had Black Friday last week, Kamala. The younger sister who's a poet. We got Black History was made last week, big time.
We have Black History today. We have Black History today when we have the first Black Secretary of State sworn in by the first Black Vice President. Now, that was a picture for you. And General Lloyd Austin, Brigadier General, or now Secretary Austin, you could just tell he's a straightforward military man. And this is what I'm talking about, the institutions of this country that African Americans have bought into, the institution and bought into the life of America, being able to pursue a life of liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And no one is more patriotic or equally as patriotic. African Americans are equally as patriotic as everybody else. And the whole notion that people, Black people, aren't invested in this country is dispelled when you meet or hear of an individual like a former general, now Secretary Austin, you know. And if you hear his story and you pay attention to who he is, It makes you, it fills you with pride, and with someone like me who kind of likes military type of stuff, and you know, I'm into certainly the service that our veterans put in, and anybody that puts it on the line and puts a uniform on and holds a gun on behalf of other people, especially our country, gets great respect from me. So I like all that stuff. I buy into, you know, all of the PR that America kind of tries to make us.
Well, you know, Eric, one of the things that we just with all of the stuff that's happening in our orbit right now, there is a spiritual lifting in Washington, D.C. And I got to tell you, folks, I said it last week, and I really meant it. I've never felt as comfortable or as protected in my nation as I was last week. Yes, we had 25,000 National Guard on our streets.
But the gun was not pointed
at us. Okay, you know how that feels to an African American who can walk out this front door and know that they are protected, and they're protected by our country in full force, and we're not the enemy. I want every day to be like that, Eric, in what I'm calling right now. Welcome to Numerica. All right, this is the Numerica. Okay.
Byron said it was New America, everybody, because the National Guard, the first time the National Guard
that's
wasn't pointing guns at us.
Yeah.
I guess that's
progress.
I mean,
that's some serious idea concept, okay?
That's progress.
Because I want people to realize, you know, you and I both know that last week's event probably was the NRA's and the gun shows and gun purchases' biggest one-day sale they've ever had. Because
mm-hmm.
they weren't buying the guns to protect from us or protect us. 3%
right.
of the population of the United States owns over 50% of the guns in the country. There are over 300 million guns in our country. Tell
yeah.
you.
They can't carry all
that. And they're
guns.
Pointed at us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
I guess you're right.
A,
that is progress. Because earlier in the
yeah,
summer,
it is progress. And to think about the hardest thing that this Congress is going to have to do is engage in the Second Amendment. Oh, my, you think
right.
it's hard right now?
Well, I think that the
you're
Second
gonna,
I mean, that's not
you're gonna have to.
I don't even think that's going to be on the table for a minute. But I wanted to say about the National Guard, I guess it is progress because we had the National Guard pointing guns at us just over the summer. So you are right, Byron.
Yeah.
That is progress.
Yeah.
4 or 5 months later, they're pointing at the other guys. So I guess that would
exactly.
give you a feeling of.
So,
but look what it took.
It's really ironic. But you know, the truth of the matter is that think of what our communities would be like if we could keep the enemy out of it. Think if we had the same protections
yeah.
that the gated communities had. Think about that.
Yeah.
We can really enjoy the liberties guaranteed to us. But if you're going out into the street, then you got to think about the young man who got killed just jogging in the Georgia, and then you had them white boys trying to conspire. Oh, I really wasn't following him. I was just, I was just driving down the street. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we know in certain parts of the country, the negative and the racism, that evil aspect is a little bit more prevalent or easily perpetuated than in other parts of the country. But I thought you were going to go in a different direction when you said there's a feeling of being lifted in D.C. I kind of am seeing it, took it to mean just the tone that Joe Biden is trying to set, just in the inviting people to go to church, inviting people to go to mass with them, even though they probably were smoking while in church, but inviting them to go to mass. I mean, he's trying to set a tone of getting everything back to normal order, get everything under control. And you could even see, like, the Fox reporter in there wanting to get his hard question to him. And Joe, give me the hard question. You know, I'll take the hard question. The guy keeps me on my toes. And because you got to talk to the other side, try to let them know the facts. And then if they still do stupid-ass shit excuse my language. I almost got through the whole show without cursing, but if they still do
that was pretty
stuff,
good,
I know, right? Once they
you
know
can blame that one on the
to.
Previous administration. See how they affected us?
Yeah, you know. But we're going
to
hold...
We were used to speaking in tongues, see? So it's like... it's like...
Man.
Trying to be a good Christian, I'm telling you, it ain't easy.
Yeah, I mean, the unfortunate thing as we go off the air is that, the nostalgia, Facebook is a tool of nostalgia. What I say is something nice. You can find that families can keep up with each other, distant families when you have distant cousins or second or third cousins and uncles and big families can keep up with each other. And people could find out, just casually, friends that they lost contact with. And there's a certain nostalgic aspect. But when you find out that those individuals that now have become, that you only saw at the reunion, high school reunion or whatever, that you're, if you decided to go back, if you wanted to be bothered, now you're seeing their thoughts and who they turned out to be. And some of them, you realize why you never kept in contact with them in the first place. And others, you kind of remember and there's good things. So hopefully with these next couple of years, we can get back to that nostalgic aspect of having the fond memories of people, because, you know, people that, if you have a good upbringing and there's people in those lives, they represent a certain a feeling of nostalgia to you. But I guess in certain instances, that's where they belong. You can't ever go back to certain times.
No, you can't. And, in the meantime, looking at where we are right now, Eric, here are the numbers. They're damning. They're damaging. It's unacceptable. And, yes, I am happy to see our professionals in this administration attacking the COVID-19 pandemic, because the numbers are scary. Right now,
and
today,
as of
January 25th, we got over 25 million people.
We got 90 seconds, Byron. We got 90 seconds.
Okay.
Why don't you give the people your sentence? You get the last word.
All right. 25 million people infected, 423,000 dead. That translates to 76,000 African-Americans dead and over 4.5 million infected, and unemployment is still got 77 million people unemployed. We got to do something, so keep pushing. Know that you got the majority. Use it. We are the majority. This is now called power politics. Peace and love, always. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
All right, Brother Byron, we'll talk to you again. All right.
Yes,
Brother
sir.
Byron Saunders, the military historian. We're going to talk to him again. Most likely on Wednesday, we're going to do another one, folks, and get Wayne up in here and let him give us the update on whatever side effects his vaccine shot has, you know, how has it affected him. It affects different people, obviously. My dad had his. He really didn't. His arm was a little sore. And Isabel had hers. She was feeling a little tired, and, you know, so various people had them. The congressman had his, and he didn't seem to have any signs. There it is, everybody. I'm Citizen Payne, Kay's son, and we want to keep up the fight, man. We got to pay attention and really achieve our objectives. That's the phrase. I'm out. Kay's son of friends. It's Bob Marley. Check him.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up.